honourable members, and officials, and representatives of different stakeholders that are here, welcome to this committee meeting of the Department Ministry of Justice and Correctional Services. The minister will be with us in 5 minutes, but we thought the other thing that we need to deal with before he arrives, so we decided to start. We have a number of apologies. Judge Vunga Chabalala, inspecting judge, is currently abroad, so he won't be here, but the CEO will be here. I don't know if there are other apologies that are with yourselves that you want to put on record.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to sneak out at about God's time to attend another committee meeting, but I'll come back in again.
That there are members here who are sitting in other committees that are sitting for the first time today, so they will be sneaking in and out, not out of disrespect for this meeting. So we have noted that. Any other, except for members who will be going to other committees? Honourable Majaki.
Honourable Mpumlang has just moved out just to attend for a while the International Relations meeting will be coming back.
Thank you. You will see on the committee business that we are supposed to deal with the minutes of the 30th of June, but those minutes, I must advise us, are not yet ready. They will be circulated on Friday. So if you could bear with us, we will do the necessary with regards to that. We also have tabling that appear on your agenda, but there are other tablings that need to be double-checked, and those are the drug plans of NPA, SIU, Public Protector, Justice and Constitutional Legal Aid. They will be double-checked and then tabled again. Is that fine, or is there any question in that regard? It's not that there's any problem with what we received, but we want to check the final documents to make sure that they still correspond with what we received before. Can we, unless there's any question, can we move on to correspondence? We have, as I said, an apology from Judge Vunga Chabalala, which is before us. We also we have a correspondence from the Women's Legal Center. They sent us a document which will be circulated to ourselves. We just received that this morning. We have a letter from Honorable James Self that we also received this morning. We will process that and take it forward. We have some changes to the program on page 2. You'll see the Thursday, 3rd July, we are saying we'll start at 13 hours to accommodate to briefing by researchers on NPA and Legal Aid South Africa. We couldn't attend to that yesterday because of time constraints. On Friday, we will start at 9:30. That slot will be used for briefing by the researcher on the South African Women Defense and Human Rights Council, and Tuesday the 8th, we'll use the slot between 9 and 9.30 for a briefing by the SIU. The Honourable Minister is here. Welcome, Honourable Minister. Thank you very much. Unless there is any question, we are ready to take the briefing from the minister. I want to request the Deputy Minister for Correctional Services. Before the minister addresses us, let me say that as this committee, we met on the 1st and agreed that in the conduct of our business, self-respect and respect for others will guide all of us, because in the past we have had experiences where we would find that some MPs would harass officials, humiliate them, and we are saying that in this Committee of Justice and Correctional Services, that will not be acceptable. There are many better ways of putting questions or soliciting answers without harassment and humiliation of others. Because all of us, whether we are officials or MPs, we are parents, we are citizens, we deserve all the respect that we can command. We are also saying that this is a multi-party forum for the consideration of national issues. So we expect that only superior arguments should be used to persuade other members to see things as we see them. So there is no need to reduce this forum to a mudslinging forum. We have no doubt that all of us are united by one thing, mainly to take South Africa forward, and that's what we're going to use this forum to do. And I must therefore welcome all of you, including the officials, and give the officials the assurance that when they come to this committee, they should relax but prepare well. And if they are not sure, they should then be guessing, they should go back and prepare, because some of us may take advantage of uncertainty to do things that should not be done here. Minister, welcome, and over to yourself. The ministers are here. I guess you know them, Honourable John Jeffries and Honourable Tavan Mokweza. That's seated over here.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. As I said to you yesterday, it invokes a sense of nostalgia in me, having sat on the benches of this institution for the last 15 years in different capacities, starting off as a ordinary backbencher to being a whip, a house whip, a chair, and finally in the last year or so being invited to the executive. There's been many friendships that have been developed over the years, and a sense of collegiality which I want to continue to underpin our relationship going forward. After all, we are first and foremost all members of parliament before we are anything else, except the president, of course, who upon his election resigns from parliament and ceases to be a member. Also to indicate that I am accompanied with me two deputies, Deputy Minister Makwetla, Thabang Makwetla, who many colleagues know very well over many years. I got to know him from when I arrived in 1999 as the caucus chair of the majority party. And since then we have had very good relations and so on. My second deputy, that is Deputy Minister Makwetla, is deputy for correctional services. My other deputy, John Jeffrey, who also I got to know and work very closely with since 1999 in different capacities in Parliament, and I see some of the familiar faces in front of me that worked with us over the years. Responsible for justice and constitutional development. So they are here to support me. And of course, an branch from both sides, justice and correctional services, of senior officials who will be with you for a better part of your interest and be in a position to elaborate further on some of the programs that will be the focus of the engagement. So really, thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me start by saying, I firstly congratulate all the political parties that have made their way back to Parliament and the new ones as well. And of course, once again, pay special tribute to the many faces from opposition benches with whom I've had the privilege to work over the years. We certainly see a situation of greater collaboration across political parties, and I believe that is the kind of sentiment that will underpin your work going forward, Chairperson. We would want to work closely and in a collaborative manner with yourself. I've already seen one or two questions, and I've returned a question back to officials and said, Your answer is too vague. When Parliament asks questions to us, let's be open and transparent, and let's answer questions of Parliament freely, to show respect for Parliament, because in terms of the Constitution, we account for Parliament, and we should do exactly that. So that's just one of the values that we want to instill in everything that we do. We have also indicated to both departments that we do not have vested interests of any kind, internally and externally. We're guided by the principles of supremacy of the Constitution and rule of law. And all of us have to act accordingly. So we're not going to be protecting or defending the indefensible just because we must just take a stance to be defensive. And to that end, for example, we've made it very clear that we are going to embark on measures that seek to instill a culture of good governance, of clean governance. I look forward to interacting with the Office of the Auditor General to get a sense of him as to how we have been faring and how we're doing in responding to this challenge. However, in the meantime, I have asked the senior management from both sides that they must do everything that is needed to put us on a path of governance things like people, you know, not honoring court decisions, where people are dismissed from faith, for example. That's because somebody's ego was bruised and they decided, well, you know, this junior official, we're not going to read it. And those kind of attitudes, I mean, we're not in government for our own personal interests, we're here to serve. So the values and cultures, the values and culture ethos that should have underpin our daily action must mirror that kind of understanding of why we are in government and what are our limits. And of course, you know, act accordingly. But there are certain apologies for it. We have a set of fundamental foundational principles, guidelines, goals that should inform what it is that we're about. Drawing firstly from the Constitution itself, the founding provisions of the Constitution and its preamble, right through to other parts of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, with Chapter 9 institutions, to act as watchdogs on various aspects of our constitutional obligations and so on. And of course, the rule of law, which talks to the body of laws that we are duty-bound to honor and give effect to. Over and above that, of course, the administration of the day implements policies of government, which in turn are underpinned and informed by policies of the political party of the day. The ANC has won elections. It is the government of the day on the basis of a manifesto that espouses the kind of policies that have been developed within that particular political party that then find expression in government policy. As officers and officials of government, we have a responsibility to give effect to that, because that is the promise we've made to the people, and we're not doing that here. Key to this promises is to fight crime and corruption. And that is right at the heart of the mandate of this particular portfolio. It is also a mandate that we share more broadly with or within a cluster, be it called Peace and Stability or the JCPS, etc. The NDP, which is the overarching policy framework, talks of working towards a South Africa in which all its people are and feel safe. What contribution is it that we're going to make towards that end and of that goal as this specific sector? That is the key challenge for us. Young girls at school should be able to play around feeling secure, not being threatened of kidnapping, crimes such as satanism in our schools. We need to deal with these issues very decisively. I believe that prevention has to be one of the core interventions that we make collectively across government. Because it involves a number of interventions. We need to deliver a justice system to our courts and all the other services that support it, be it legal aid, be it prosecutorial services, and so forth, which is accessible and affordable to our people. And to that end, it's a number of initiatives that are underway within both justice and broadly within disaster to give effect to that. The cost of litigation has thus become extremely exorbitant. I don't want to quote some of the figures that we mentioned about some of the cases that are going on that you've been watching on TV. But clearly, we need to find ways in which ordinary South Africans can enjoy quality of justice that those that can afford also enjoy. I was privileged last week to attend an international conference on legal aid at Beitbridge Hotel in Johannesburg, where several justices and ministers of justice from different parts of the world share ideas and exchange experiences on how to make justice accessible. And our own legal aid board was given the thumbs up for being a model system for the world on how to make justice accessible and affordable. For my part, having chaired the Committee on the Auditor General the last five-year term of Parliament, it was very pleasing that I'm inheriting an institution that has maintained key audits for the last 11 years. And I thought that is another reason why they are a model institution. They have developed new ways of making justice accessible. Through phone-in services where people get free legal advice online provided by competent lawyers on the other end and so on. So I think that's the strides that have been made. I'm looking, I can't remember whether it's 147 or so courts, but new courts that have been built over the last 20 years. The kind of expansion that has taken place to make justice accessible to our people, especially in historically neglected and disadvantaged areas, is quite remarkable. There is work, and maybe I should pause at this juncture to really express sincere appreciation to my predecessor, Minister Jakhadele, for the amount of work that he put in expanding the infrastructure of our court system during his term. I must say that both the building of new courts and the revamping of new courts, you know about the court in Limpopo, that is almost near completion, I understand. I look forward to visiting that court to see how things are going there. And of course, there is work underway to build one in Mpumalanga, which provinces up to so far did not have high courts of their own, so that each province of the Republic can boast of having its own court rather than having to travel to other provinces. But apart from the ego side of things, it's really more about making court services, justice itself, more accessible by bringing it closer to where people are. There are many other changes that have been effected. There are courts in historically black areas, the townships, the rural areas, which were not full-service courts, all because it was seen that black people don't quite need all the services as much as white people do. So you have to travel to right areas to get full services. All of that has become something of the past. Increasingly, we are reestablishing most of the historically black areas courts to become full service courts. So that you can bring your civil claims, you can bring your maintenance, you can bring your whatever other specialist services that can be offered by a court, especially lower courts, closest to where you live. So we really, again, express our sincere appreciation to those that walked this road before us and the strides that they have made. We have become a single ministry, and we are in the process of putting in place initiatives that give full expression to that purpose, which is to enhance greater integration and coordination and synergization of services that should work in a relay method, so that from the one end of the system to the other end, there is as limited disruption, delay, and breakdown in the flow of services possible. But it's also to ensure that the one system reinforces the other. Case flow, for example, if it works efficiently, it means you would then have fewer people awaiting trial and on remand for long periods of time, crowding our correctional facilities unnecessarily, awaiting their matters to be finalized. Because if the courts work efficiently, if presiding officers, magistrates and judges take full charge of their courts and rein everybody in as captains of their own ship, the ripple effect thereof is that you increasingly have fewer people in remand awaiting trials, or trials that are prolonged because of inefficient management of their case. And this is just an example of areas where gains can be achieved, both from the side of the criminal justice system leading up to conviction, as well as freeing up space in our correctional facilities, which are currently, I understand, about 159% full, and that figure varies from facility to facility. Your urban centers being the worst affected. So there's a number of interventions that we see contribute towards reducing the overcrowding situation. I'm scheduled to meet with the Chabalala probably in the next week, the interest to look at the what their findings are in relation to the situation in our correctional facilities, issues of overcrowding, the basic rights of inmates, access to medical care. And yesterday when I met with our officials, I asked the question, our jails are perceived to be best sentence placed because of perceptions of high risk of infection by life-threatening diseases and so on and so on. What is the real situation? Is this perception well end? And the preliminary feedback I'm getting, and I'm looking forward to going into the depth of this, because the question I kept on asking officials when they were presenting the AGP draft plans and so on was, to what extent have we put emphasis on prevention when we deal with the HIV question in our correctional facilities, for example? And the official from the inspectorate office said to me that contrary to popular view out there, the conditions in our jails are not as bad as they are projected. I understand that you have a standing arrangement to receive their report of course they'll present it and you can interrogate them at will. But if the impression that I was given is correct, then I think that is a typical South African story. What you read is not necessarily always what it takes. So I think part of what we would want to do is to beef up our communication services so that the truth is communicated out to them. The reality, rather than in order to reduce levels of speculation, let the truth come out and let people work it out for themselves as long as the facts are actually presented. The same issue with allegations of corruption and conditions in our administration, correctional facilities, some even would allege things in our court system and so on and so on. Like I said at the beginning, our approach is good clean governance. We're not beholden to anybody. That is our value system. It's underpinned by the policies of our organization. We can take out Mangaung, you can take out Bulukwani, you can take out any of the ANC policy documents or resolutions. The issue of anti-corruption is clearly articulated there. So I said to officials, even if it's my uncle that's involved, please don't call me and ask if you should arrest him or not. Let me also read about it in the paper the following day, like everybody else. I don't carry a briefcase full of tenders, full of jobs for anybody, comrades, friends, relatives. All South Africans should be treated fairly, equitably. But in the course of that, we have laws that we must observe. Black economic empowerment is national policy. Let's not be shy to give full expression to it. Be it in the form of awarding of contracts or in the form of opportunities, briefs, state attorney sources, and so on. Let's not see ourselves outside of national policies on economic transformation, on social transformation. Let's ensure that our youth get opportunities to get skills. Let's intensify internships. You know, when I worked with the Office of the Auditor General, I was just amazed at how in a short space of time they've been able to turn around the participation of young black women in this highly sought after auditing profession. They have improved the level of outcomes in terms of the number of trainees who eventually qualify. I think they shifted it from 8% average to about 32%, and it was growing. So I think that we really need to do this thing as part of our contribution to the national ideal of fighting unemployment, inequality, and poverty. We cannot say that our brief is just to deal with crime prevention and tackling corruption. Yes, we should lead in that regard. And to that end, I've indicated to those departments it's spring cleaning time. Any tenders, I know there's a question about tenders and so on, that have been awarded improperly must be investigated. And if fault is found, that must be corrected. Whatever that correction by law requires. Any actions of whatever nature, the flouting of rules, and privilege of government to do things, if it ever happened, I don't have any evidence before me of anything, but if it ever happened, let it be dealt with. And all the other issues that I alluded to earlier. Now the intensification of the fight against crime, therefore, and dealing effectively with corruption is going to be at the heart. Starting internally, making sure NPA, before you prosecute anybody else, you must look at yourself in the mirror and say, am I clean? Alright? Those that don't know, if you have evidence of a corrupt magistrate, you know where you lodge your complaint. There's a body called the Magistrate Commission. Under that, there is a structure called the Ethics Committee. Men or persons, whatever the correct gender version of it, are by very competent and capable people who can investigate allegations. And that by way of a simple affidavit. All right. And the Magistrate Commission can make a finding against the magistrate, only Parliament can remove the magistrate. So people should not talk, you know, in general terms about high levels of corruption and related complaints, but do nothing about it, all right? As if you don't have recourse in our system. The same applies with judges. Prosecutor, there is an avenue through which you can, you know, take that matter up. So let's stop talking down upon ourselves as a nation and yet do nothing about it, you know, and show a sense of love for ourselves as a people. So those are some of the things I believe we need to do. I believe that our correctional services, yes, they are there to provide rehabilitation to offenders so that they can be returned to society to lead a normal life as dignified citizens and members of society. But one of the things that I believe needs to be explored is while they're in a prison, what more can they do to prevent this? Correctional Services has programs to secure its own nutritional needs internally through various agricultural programs and so on. We need to expand those programs to rural poor communities who need that kind of support. Train them to be able to produce their own food. Let's use the capacity and the footprint that we have across the country. We have about 200 food facilities that exist in all the provinces. It could be cultural skills. Let's engage young people, partly to teach them away from criminal behavior, but also to impart skills, to give them an alternative to criminal behavior. So there's so much we can do in the form of supporting prevention of crime, which in turn will benefit us because it will reduce the numbers of especially young people. The statistics show that the 80% or so of violent crimes that are being committed by young people. Now, what it raises for me is young people that are disengaged and that are finding alternative ways to keep themselves busy. Unfortunately, perverse ways of keeping themselves busy. So let's look for opportunities. Let's look for quick wins where we can draw in as many young people into productive, socially gainful, you know, kind of activity that promotes them, that assists them to be positive contributors to the advancement of the social and economic transformation of society that we all talk about. Having been a parliamentarian for this long and many other things, I have the temptation to talk on the end. So I think I should pause here, Chair. Because in any case, you'll be having all the officials to give you the details of the various programs they are at your disposal. Thank you very much.
Honourable Minister, thank you for giving us the tools of navigation. I think from today going forward, none of us will be in doubt as to what the vision and mission of the ministry is. as I said in my opening remarks, we are united in one thing, that of taking South Africa forward. And we want to assure you at this committee that we will exercise our oversight vigorously, but at all times ensure that our criticism is constructive criticism, so that you achieve what you have set as your objective. So we want to assure you of unqualified support. Honorable members, are there any questions for clarity to the Honorable Minister, Honorable Hart, Honorable Degas?
Thank you, Chairperson, and may we from our side congratulate the Minister on his appointment and the Deputy Ministers on their appointments as well. It's been an honour to work with most of the colleagues over the years and to see them now in that position. There's just one or two issues just from the Minister's input as a matter of setting out the policy. And maybe one can just start by saying what we appreciate the collapse in the executive decision to collapse or to put Correctional Services and Justice and Constitutional Development under one ministry. Obviously it has an impact on our portfolio committee, and that's an issue which we as Parliament will have to deliberate on. We now have a joint committee that deals with both those issues, and obviously it's with my experience in justice, our work then was huge, and now we'll have to see how we manage the increased workload from one portfolio committee. That is an issue which this Parliament will have to deal with. But I foresee difficulties with exercising oversight and passing legislation, where we have in the past had difficulty passing our workflow that we had. But that is an issue which we as Parliament will have to deal with. So yesterday when we were in discussion, one of the issues that I would like the Minister to, he might not be able to respond to now, but to consider the issue we will obviously be raising, that is of course the departmental budget. An issue which we in the previous Parliament and previous Justice Committee argued strenuously during the budget review process for an increase in the Department's budget in terms of our powers and as Parliament, and we continually we raised those concerns with National Treasury, but when it came to the end of the financial year, it now appears that there's been a significant underspending of the Department's budget. And that is an issue which we will be engaging with the DG, but Minister, you might want to just also allude to that, because obviously it makes it more difficult for us as Parliament to motivate an increase in the departmental budget when it is underspending. And it seems the main component of underspending related to capital expenditure. And we discussed this yesterday in the Portfolio Committee, and the inputs are obviously on the building of the courts and the delays in that which lie with the Public Works Department. And we discussed briefly whether we should have a discussion with the Public Works Portfolio Committee, and I think that is way forward. But on a ministerial level, I think it is very important as well to engage your counterparts in Public Works to investigate why there are these delays. If we look at the Limpopo High Court, for example, it's scheduled to be completed in January 2012. Now looking at January 2015, so these are issues that are a major concern with the impact on service delivery, and I don't know, Minister, it would be good if you could just comment on that issue in particular. Secondly, Minister, you alluded very briefly to the issue of non-compliance with court orders, and I'm sure we're all aware of the headlines and newspapers of the Chief of the National Defence Force and others being arrested for, or you know, a warrant out for their contempt of court order, whatever the merits are of that particular case. But I think I'd like to hear from you what steps are going to be taken to ensure that court orders are complied with, because obviously when it is not complied with, it undermines the rule of law. And you did allude to that in fact, and that is an issue which I would like you to just comment on. Thank you, Chair, for those few comments from our side.
Take too long, Mr. Self and
Thank you very much indeed, Chair, and may I, from our side, also congratulate the Minister and the Deputy Ministers on their appointment, and say that the Minister certainly gave a very encouraging speech here today, and we look forward to working very closely with him and his deputies in achieving what I think are joint objectives for us all. Now, my colleague, Steve Swart, talked about the joint ministry, and I think that it obviously makes sense. But historically, we have had a situation where we've had a minister and a deputy for correctional services. We've now got half a minister and a deputy for correctional services. And a big department with, as you said, 243 facilities, 42,000 staff members, and a great deal that goes down in that department, some of which you alluded to. And I don't want to talk the department down, but there is a history of corruption in that department, which I don't think we're fully on top of, and that is why I welcome very warmly your comments in which you say that there's going to be some spring cleaning that's going to be taking place, because I think that's long overdue. I also very much welcome the idea that there will be great transparency, because I can give you chapter and verse of your esteemed predecessor avoiding answering parliamentary questions in such a way as to evade accountability to Parliament. But I really want to latch on to what you said about not honouring court decisions. And there's a particular court case which I'm involved in, and that concerns the Democratic Alliance versus the Acting National Director of Public Prosecutions. It's been 5.5 years on the go, and there's a very clear court order from the Supreme Court of Appeal against the National Director, Acting National Director of Public Prosecution, to hand over some documents, which we're still waiting for. And I would like your assistance, if I could ask it, in facilitating the carrying out of that particular court order. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. May I also add my very warm congratulations to the Minister on his appointment, and wish him lots and lots of luck in competing in the election. I have many questions, Minister, but let me start with the one that is most pressing for me, and that is the issue regarding the internet. As you have said, very encouragingly, that you have called them to look in the mirror and check whether they agree. I think it's clear to everybody that that probably is not the case. And I'm not sure that a suggestion that they should look in the mirror and check whether they agree is going to be sufficient. I wonder if you could be a little more clear as to what your intentions are with regard to the problems that now beset the NPA. I think we all agree that it's a vital institution. It is currently undergoing huge problems. The authority and the position of the National Director is constantly being undermined by his senior management. That is something that I'm not sure that he can address since he doesn't appoint those senior managers. So if you could be a little more clear about what you have in mind in that regard. And then, of course, there has been the difficulty with the Integrity Management Unit being disbanded for abusing its mandate. If you have more clarity in that regard, it should be useful. The head has been suspended, and there are other members that are constantly in the news for no good reason. And then, of course, there's the decision in the North Gauteng High Court, the Supreme Court of Appeal, and the High Court in KwaZulu-Natal regarding the Deputy National Director, Abigail Cheba, and her suitability for her post. Similarly, Mr. Sebi, who is a Special Director, similar decisions have been made in the North Gauteng High Court and the FAA with regard to him. To a lesser degree, Mr. Nguyenyathi, the DPP of North Gauteng.
No, Honourable Ritenbach, I don't think we have enough time today. I want to ensure that all members have an opportunity to put their questions. So, okay, we hold it there. And
sure. Those are my question issues. Thank you.
Maybe I should get the last one out of the way. And
Honourable Brayton Bakara just comes from that institution, so she knows the going in of that institution a lot better than I do. And hopefully, going forward, she'll be able to share valuable information, insider information that will help us in dealing with some of the issues. That's to say that we have identified the issue of resolving the issues around the NDPP as a priority in dealing with the whole broader issue of the management in the NPA, which has been widely publicized and public knowledge. We have reported that, as you know, by law, only the Office of the President can deal with the matter, and indeed that is the case. We are merely there to support that office as and when we are required to do so. So this is a matter in respect of which, at this point, I, as Minister of Justice, am not directly in charge of. All I can tell you, because that office is in regular interaction with ourselves, is that the matter is in hand, that the NDPP himself is involved in a process with the Office of the President to resolve the issues associated with his status and allegations related thereto. I think that it is only fair that we deal with one issue at a time. I am sure that once the issue has been resolved relating to NDPP, either way, and I do not want to give the impression here that the matter will be resolved in one direction or the other. It is not within my powers by law, as I said earlier. Now, all other matters relating to management of the NPA would also be looked at. Right? But at the end of the day, we have to make sure that at the end of this, we have a well-functioning leadership structure at the helm of the institution so that it can fulfill its constitutional and statutory responsibility fully. Now, this should not take away from the fact that that institution has by and large went very well in the 7 years. Its performance levels and bias has been very good. It's maintained in audits and it has constantly been improving at the level of service delivery. So I think that whilst indeed issues of leadership need to be resolved because of the risks, the obvious risks that it poses, we shouldn't be detracted from acknowledging the continued and unrelenting commitment to service that is displayed in the sterling work of the men and women on the ground on a daily basis continue to provide to South Africa. And of course, when matters have reached a point where we are in a position to update the public on developments in this matter and the other matters, we will gladly do so. But for now, we think that we should allow certain internal processes to run their course so that there is minimal interest. What we did to stabilize the situation there was to meet with all the senior managers to say that in the interest of maintaining stability, they should, if you like, let's have the cessation of hostilities for the time. That's not the ideal phrasing of it, street language treated as such.
essentially to say we want to see collaboration. People should resist even using statutory powers that they have. Take disciplinary action against certain people. People should stop approaching newspapers and saying all sorts of ugly things about each other. And as for us, we have not solicited any evidence or any information that is being punted out there. And people should not provide us information that we've not asked for until we ask for such information. So we appreciate the voluntary spirit, but there are others who are in place. What we want to see is people working together, making sure that there's stability at the helm, and that there is normalcy until such time as these matters are resolved. And of course, all other issues that are raised will be dealt with in due course. The issue of the NDPP not honoring court judgments, I will familiarize myself with the matters and where they're at. And I can only really comment once I have a sense of what the issues really are. The most dangerous thing to do, which many of us politicians tend to be tempted to do, is to comment on issues without full facts, without having a roof to the fire, so to speak. So I will not comment on that until one has had a sense of where matters are at. And I'll only comment if it's within my purview to comment on specific issues. Sometimes when things on the face of it appear to be having something to do with you, when you look at the issues more closely, you discover they actually have nothing to do with you. Just to give an example, a lot of people would expect me to say a lot about the Office of the Public Protector, for example. And yet the Public Protector, in terms of the Constitution, comes to this House, the National Assembly, and reports to the National Assembly. So don't expect me to say anything or do anything to do with Ms. Tuli Madonsela. She does not report to me. My job is to give her budget, to give her the resources to do her work. So I'm just making the point that sometimes we expect it to comment on everything under the sun, as long as it sounds or looks like it might have something to do with us, when in fact it doesn't. Now, the issue of court orders not being honored, you know, I'm the unfortunate victim of something which we have discussed with the DG Justice to make sure that we nip in the bud. And that is the issue that arises, especially in the Office of the State. You get served with papers, judgment is taken against you, and you only get to know about it in the papers after the judgment is taken. In some instances, you don't even know about the judgment until you are in contempt. Now, that is something that we really have to address. I was sworn in on the 26th, for example, was it May? On the 28th, 2 days after I take office, I hear from the media that there is a court order against me to release a certain, no, not to release, my apologies, to make a decision on whether or not to release a certain Mr. Eugene Dikoko within 30 days. I haven't seen a shred of court paper on my desk between the day I was appointed and the day of judgment was taken. Now, I won't go into the details of the circumstances, but the point I really want to emphasize is that the State Attorney's Office is there to service the whole of government by ensuring that it is the point of service of court papers and so on, and they have a responsibility to make sure that they provide a professional service to government. we cannot continue with anecdotal stories of papers being served, government departments only getting to know about it after. And I won't comment about the circumstances of the case where 2 days after I take office, I'm already left with a court order. When did I find the time to even peruse the files and appraise myself of the matters concerned? But be it as it may, we will comply with that order. And within the 30-day period that the court has given us, we'll make sure that we make the decision as is required by the court. So, the particular circumstances of this specific case that was reported in the media, I don't have it. And again, I don't want to be a bad politician and speculate on matters I have looked at the file of. The issue of budget and the infrastructure question, I'm really looking forward to a pipeline bilateral between myself and the Minister Raisi, because even when I was still a backbencher 15 years ago, public works was always cited as a culprit when it comes to the issue of infrastructure. I know it's a difficult area, but hopefully through our close interaction, we'll be able to identify the blockages and find ways to resolve them. And of course, we have the other relationship with them. We're arriving out of certain investigations, and with the work of the SIU, we'll make sure that if some of the abuses that have been happening there get dealt with effectively. In fact, the whole area of supply chain are not deviating from the question, but I just want to preemptively indicate that we will vigorously pursue through our various agencies like the SIU and so on, you know, all these problems of supply chain and abuses that border or constitute criminality and abuse of state resources in that manner. I know that is not a source of comfort because it doesn't offer concrete solutions. But certain things are not entirely within our hands, and we can only do the best we can to have them resolved. I think perhaps I should leave all other details to my officials who will be engaging. You will be engaging in the next 2 days or so to give you specifics. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. I think it is clear from your answers that some of the questions are premature. We should be trying to set our agenda because the focus now is really on the budgeting process. But thank you for your answer. Honorable Minister.
Thank you. Just to welcome the minister's input, and really appreciate the comments made about the ANC in the government of the day, and that appreciates the role of the opposition to reach its processes. As political parties, we have a mandate from South Africans to lead and create a prosperous of democratic and united South Africa, and want to actually emphasize united South Africa. And that actually is what will determine the manner in which we will handle our business, putting South Africa forward. We do understand that we cannot always hold similar views, but it is important for us always to put at the top of our mind the importance of developing and advancing this country and individuals to actually allow them to unleash their potentials. And indeed, it is correct that we should actually need processes that don't just create depressions. Because to an extent, sometimes you find that we have issues that become problematic because of the kind of depressions that are created. The minister has actually emphasized that the approach that we should actually focus on clean government. And I think whatever happens, indeed we're going to actually ensure that an oversight structure we will have to fight crime and corruption to ensure that we allow both departments to fulfill their mandate. Thank you.
Advocate
I think mainly I'm covered by Sajjad and Maple, and I just wanted to emphasize with the minister that the approach that he's taking now about the department is a very encouraging one, and I hope that it will make the work of the parliamentary committee much easier. That's all now. Thank you very much.
Honorable Mutapu, I'll come back to from you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, our Minister, Deputy Minister, and officials and the media. Honorable Madake and Honorable Mpumlana have taken some of the points I wanted to talk to. So I really hope from the ANC side we appreciate the approach as the minister has said. And again, I want to touch on some of the issues like issue of teammate mention. Initially we know that incarceration was the main point for our offenders, this inmate. Now there is this issue of rehabilitation and social integration, which is highly appreciated. That's what we say at the ANC, we appreciate the approach, and I concur with my colleagues here. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Tabo. Honorable, you'll excuse me for not remembering the name, I guess.
Thank you. The surname is Horn. Thank you, Chairperson. My first question to the Minister is in connection with the Office of the Chief Justice, which has been set up quite a few years ago already, and maybe adding to the issues already raised in respect of the budget and the fact that the budget was not increased in line with the request by the this committee, and to a certain extent our predecessors as members of the committee. I would just like to ask of the Minister how he sees the role of the Office of the Chief Justice, also specifically in respect of capacitation and funding going forward, as it is currently not provided for in the budget. Then secondly, I want to maybe ask a follow-up in relation to the questions already raised in respect of the NPA. And whilst fully appreciating that as the NDPP and other senior officials within the prosecuting authority, while they are appointed by the president, therefore also to be dismissed by him, I want to maybe pick the minister's brain just on the issue of whether in his view then issues relating to the NDPP can be fully divorced from the function of the NPA, especially on a senior level, and he refers to also issues of accounting and reporting to Parliament and this committee in relation to other functionaries, and whether he, what is his view in respect of what the role of this committee certainly is also in enforcing accountability on the part of the NPA going forward. Thank you.
Honourable Minister, over to you.
We are not sure what accountability of the NPA in this regard relates to. I know that in the Jinwala Commission report, a reference was made to our oversight responsibility over the NPA without having to interfere in their independence in executing the short of a better way, judicial function or function in relation to prosecutorial role, but also indicating think that a complex area that still needs to be further developed, and the rules of the game there are not so clearly articulated, be it in the constitution or in the law. So going forward, we need to look at how we crystallize a common understanding of the mutual relationship there. I can't take it further than that. The NPA and its ability to discharge its responsibilities, given the challenges and how those matters, as I reported, are in hand and are being dealt with. Starting with seeking to resolve the challenges associated with the head of the NPA, which have been widely reported on. I believe that you really can't deal effectively with all the other lower levels of command without having that resolved, the very top position situation. So I think that at best, what we could do to assist the process is to be patient enough to allow those processes to run their course. Those are obviously delicate legal matters that that need to be allowed. In my response to his statement, for example, recently in Parliament, I indicated that by law, the matter is currently in the executive sphere. If you take by way of analogy the position of magistrates and judges, for example, the Magistrate Commission and the Judicial Services Commission have a first right at the issue. And once they have concluded their work, the matter comes to Parliament. And it's ultimately Parliament that makes a final decision. And it would be wrong in that context, for example, for Parliament to start engaging with a process that is still being processed by those institutions. So in similar vein, I would urge that wait and see how this matter is dealt with in the executive sphere. And in due course, when it is due before this open council, if it does eventually go that route, because it might not necessarily need to go that route, then this house would be at perfect liberty to deal with it accordingly. The issue of Chief Justice Office. I just want to indicate that I met with the Chief Justice as one of my earlier meet and greet sessions to clarify a few issues, including the issue of separation out of the administration of courts to be placed in the hands of the courts themselves. Coincidentally, when I was at this conference last week on legal aid, I met the official from the Attorney General's office of the U.S., and they told me there that courts are completely separate, and they do their own everything. And in fact, the concept of the Chief of the Justice Department is essentially the Attorney General. Therefore, the Department of Justice in the U.S. is about a completely different system. In our context, among the points I've made to the Chief Justice is yes, anything that will assure our courts that they can exercise their responsibility and mandate independently, efficiently, we will support. If they feel that the best way to do that is to be in charge of their own resources, their own administration, that's fine. We cannot, however, derelict duty by not providing them all the support that they may need. at this point in time, the budget has not been fully transferred, so we still exercise responsibility to support the administration, of course. A CEO or account officer has been established, and we're in the process of assisting with the gradual takeover of that office, of at least the administration of the Chief Justice, and then of the High Courts, and then eventually bring in the lower courts. So that work is underway. But what we made it clear is that we will not abdicate political responsibility to ensure that overall our courts are supported, are well resourced, and are able to do their work and to champion politically the support for, full support for our groups. I sit in cabinet, the Chief Justice doesn't. I sit in the National Assembly, the Chief Justice doesn't. And generally we do not expect our courts to be fighting political battles to get better resources and other things in the political terrain, be it the executive or in parliament. That our responsibility as politicians. So we will continue to champion their cause so that they continue to enjoy full support to be able to do execute their objectives.
Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Minister, could you tell me if you have time to consider what your view would be to have the position of the interpreters? We've seen that there are certain problems with interpreters, and I certainly have a lot of experience there. There needs to be a training facility for interpreters, and certainly their position needs to be treated a lot more professionally than currently is in the court. And I just wondered if you had time to consider their position and if you have a view in that regard.
Thank you, Chairperson. I absolutely understand the Minister's reluctance to commit himself on making or giving an opinion on a court case which he hasn't yet seen the files on. But may I ask him that in terms of Section 33(2) of the National Prosecuting Act, he's entitled to receive a report from an MPO on any court case, and could I ask him to obtain such a report and then to lay that report before this committee? Thank you, Chair.
Just to indicate that we've noted the response of the Minister in relation to the Office of the Chief Justice vis-a-vis the budget vote, and we actually indicate that the government has already needs close monitoring due to the whole idea of separation of powers vis-a-vis accountability in terms of the budget and parliament to the roof. Thank you.
No, the sources of most of the challenges that we are facing appears to me to emanate from the socio-economic conditions under which our people live. So the legacy of apartheid is very much with us and creating these challenges. And I heard the Minister refer to a very important campaign, the Plough Back campaign, which actually can prevent some of the problems that we have. I thought that this committee would pay some attention to that. Thank you.
Maybe starting with just that last point, I've already been approached by, I think that's a faith-based organization or a church in Popo that says that they provide all range of services to some 3,000 inmates, and work closely with correctional services, and they would want to visit the Popo to look at ways in which you know, they can collaborate going forward. And of course, when I was at the NEC, the NGO that is thing. So I look forward to making time just to interact with the faith-based community and look at what work and collaborative efforts they have been doing so far, be it in terms of addressing the spiritual needs of inmates, but also some of the social programs involving inmates that seek to assist them in making a contribution to social transformation that I alluded to earlier. So we will pay some attention to that. And of course, as I said, you know, some of the programs I'm told include, you know, working with schools. I mean, if you talk of role models, kids watch movies, these American movies that gratify and glorify violent crime and so on. And maybe one of the things we should be doing is to use offenders themselves to change the mindset of our youth around visiting schools and actually showing them that it can be cool or it is cool not to do crime and share their own personal experiences and so on. And I think we can do it jointly with others like the police and so on. So we look forward to those innovative ideas coming forth because prevention, as I said earlier, as the English say, is better than cure. Now, the office of the Chief Justice, Honorable Majaki, indeed you're correct that how we manage this in terms of ensuring, I mean, the last thing we want is on the first year of assuming autonomy over the budget and the administration for the judiciary not to obtain a clean audit. That would be embarrassing indeed. And I don't know how you as a committee would deal with that. Will you call the Chief Justice to account for it? I don't know. We certainly wouldn't want to expose our judiciary to situations like that. So we'll be looking at making sure that the transition is as smooth and seamless as possible so that we do not have undesirable situations like that. I'm sure in the opposition does not look forward to celebrating failure of government of the day. I'm sure you are well-meaning when you criticize some of the shortcomings in administration and so on. So we all would want to tell a good story because we all would want to be part of creating that good story. The issue of the NPA and the Section 32 of the NPA of 33 and so on, we certainly can look at that. But everything has to be interpreted in context. You see, I do not approach law in a mechanistic way. Law is temporary. It's meant to achieve something. It's not an end in itself, in my view. So to the extent that that section assists us in achieving something that needs to be achieved, we could look at that as part of a broader examination of truth. And look at where we have a specific role to play there, given, and it's through exactly what is the context and why should we be the one that plays that role, and so on. Now, the issue of interpreters, I must tell you that I once witnessed when I was a law student a sad situation in court, where an accused was acquitted in the former then Homeland High Court because an interpreter had said in the one instance that the accused brought a bottle half full with beer and then later said half full with whiskey. And the reason was because in Venda, like all other African languages, alcohol and beer is the same with joala, harwa, and so on. So the interpreter did not misinterpret but was misinterpreted. And the judge in his judgment alluded to the witness being incredible because he had given different versions, that in the one instance the bottle was half full of whiskey and in the other half full of beer, and the two are clearly distinct. And since that is the only witness, and because all the people in court, all the officials, the counsel, the prosecution, the judge, everybody was right, and they did not understand an indigenous language. Nobody challenged that. And the family was upset, saying all the effort came to zero. We should resort to alternative ways of seeking justice. So we really need to look at the critical role that interpretation services play. It can be a decisive point, a pivotal point that determines whether a case goes left or right. So in that instance, for example, I think that if our training was right, the interpreter should have been able to say to the court, but hang on, there's something missing here. That maybe the judge would have said he's interfering and going over the bounds of his parameters and so on. So we really need to look at some of the concrete practical problems in our courts, especially when it comes to making sure that some of the long-standing gripes that some of our indigenous communities have had with the system as a whole. The chair yesterday was raising the issue, for example, about why is this that it seems as if, contrary to the Constitution, our legal system is essentially common law, Roman Dutch, when significant part of our population is indigenous people of this country who also had their own legal system called the African customary law. And of course, people who are Muslims who have their own respect, their own legal dispensations and so on. So one of the areas that we're going to be looking at in the administration is to really revisit the issue, which is stated in the Constitution itself, that says that both the common law and customary law are law in the Republic only to the extent and up to the extent that they are consistent with the Constitution. In fact, that principle is binding in this, even on the laws that we pass here. They are valid only to the extent that they are consistent with the Constitution. So we're going to be looking at how do they ensure that while giving expression to those dispensations, for those that live those systems, that they're given full expression, and otherwise that where they are in conflict with the Constitution, and only then they are treated accordingly.
Thank you, Honorable Minister. We shall be breaking for tea, but let me say that when some of us studied law, it was compulsory to do Afrikaans, English, and Latin, so that we understand the law fully. Now, similarly, today's lawyers cannot understand the law fully and the people that they serve unless at least they know one indigenous African language. Now, if you practice in KZN when the language is Zulu, and then you're a judge, you are a prosecutor, you don't even understand that language, that's going to lead to injustice. So I want to agree with the minister that this question should be looked into. And also the question of training of judges, prosecutors, and so on. And thank you, Honorable Minister, for your insight into these matters we have taken forward. But lastly, also to say that we should welcome the Minister's proposal that his ministry should work together with other ministries like police, social development, because you find that in the areas where we live, there are many ex-offenders who have skills and they are unemployed, and those skills are needed in communities, but they are not being utilized. So I hope that this campaign of your Honorable Minister will be developed, because it can also assist MP when they do constituency work, that we don't just do it in darkness. We do it in such a way that we support the very campaign that you are proposing in the village. Shall we wait for tea? And we should be back here. We should be back here 11:15.